Hello and welcome to the Climate Chats podcast. My name is Christian Friedrich. Today, I am glad to welcome two guests on our podcast. I am joined by Melanie Pill from the Australian National University and by Franziska Wolf from the Hamburg University of Applied Sciences. Both have been involved in Climate 2020, the worldwide online climate change conference, but in somewhat different roles. And Franziska, I was wondering whether you'd like to tell us a bit about yourself, but also about Climate 2020, the online conference, and kick things off for us. Hi.
Sure, Kristen. My pleasure. Yes, my name is Franziska Wolf. I work at the university in Hamburg in Germany at the Research and Transfer Center, Sustainability and Climate Change Management. At the center, my day-to-day job basically consists of running international projects. I'm a project manager, senior project manager actually already, because I've been there for a number of years now. And I'm also overseeing and coordinating our new area at the center that deals with digital learning and digital online education. What we do there is basically we design online courses on all different, all sorts of topics related to sustainability and climate change. Mm-hmm. And we do this in form of online courses, so the traditional way of online learning, basically. But we also thought of new ways of kind of getting people together, getting climate change information disseminated and spread out around the globe, basically, because this technology just is perfect for that cause. And that's what we actually did with our worldwide online climate conference, Climate 2020. So basically, this has been thought of a long time ago. We started in 2008 already with our first online climate conferences. Back then, it was nothing more than a plain website with a lot of written text presented and a few discussion fora, basically. And since then, it has basically transformed and evolved. And now, in 2020, this year, we started with a new look and feel, with a totally new technical infrastructure, and also with a larger team that supported in the back end and run and co-organize the overall conference. So Climate 2020 is basically our vehicle to disseminate latest climate change research around the world in an open access and climate friendly manner. So basically what we managed to achieve there is that we reached out to now more than 3,000 participants, online delegates who mm-hmm. visited regularly our page between the 23rd and 30th of March of this year. So that was our hot week, basically, with very little sleep, but a lot of fun as well, and much interaction. And that was just a fabulous time. And I'm very happy that Melanie also joined, contributed a paper as well, and took part in many of the activities that we offered there.
Basically, the perfect segue. I don't even have to say that much now. Thanks. Melanie, would you like to introduce yourself as well? You've been in a very different role as Franziska already said, involved in the Climate 2020 conference, but maybe tell us a bit about yourself. What is it that you're working on? Where are you working? And also, what was your overall impression of the Climate 2020 conference?
Yeah, sure. Well, thanks for having me in your podcast, by the way. I think it's a great opportunity to have a chat about the conference. So as you said, I actually took part as a participant. So I'm sitting at the other end of the spectrum, and I'm a PhD scholar at the Australian National University, like you said before, and I'm looking at financing loss and damage from climate change in small island states. So what kinds of losses and damages occur from impacts that climate change currently has in the world. And I'm looking in particular at islands, small island states. Mm-hmm. So there are different types of loss and damage. And I'm trying to figure out how we can find a way to fund losses and damages. And there are different types, like slow onset events. You might have heard of sea level rise, for example. Then there is the opposite, so to speak, the sudden onset events, which are natural disasters or hurricanes. And then there are other things like economic and non-economic losses. So anything that has to do with monetary values, how can we replace infrastructure and houses and roofs and things like that. And then you have losses that occur on a personal level. So anything that you have personal value of, anything that is just related to yourself. And then we also look at displacement or human mobility of people in small island developing states. So, yeah, so that's basically sort of my big PhD project. And I've been doing a lot of research over the last 2 years and have another long year to go. I've been doing some field work in island states. I've visited Fiji. I went to Dominica last year and was able to talk to residents there who were affected by the really devastating hurricane season in 2017, where really three hurricanes swept through the Caribbean and devastated a lot of islands there. So I was able to talk to people affected by that. And I went to the conference of the parties last year in Spain. And before that, I went to Katowice in Poland. I was able to talk to a lot of policymakers in that in those two events as well, and what they think about loss and damage. And all of those impressions are going into my project and trying to figure out what different people think about how we need to address losses and damages from climate change.
Okay, interesting. Mm. That is probably also what your paper was about. You have been too humble to mention it yet, but you were also awarded the best one. You are one of the awardees for the best paper award, right?
Yeah, I think I am. Yes, someone told me. I didn't realize at first, but then yeah, I saw it and I was like, oh yeah, that's quite nice.
Your paper was about basically this overall realm that you just talked about, sea level rise and different kinds of losses of climate change, or?
Yeah, so the paper that I presented at the Climate 2020 conference was sort of a follow-up paper on something that I presented last year in Fiji. And it basically zoomed into one of the issues of loss and damage, and it looked at planned relocation. So mm-hmm. When we have to move communities away from where they live to another place, basically because of the impacts of climate change and sea level rise. So I looked at that, and then what types of personal losses are associated with that for people. So is there attachment to place? You lose your home. You don't just lose a house. You lose a home. And how do you address that? And how can you ensure that this response to climate change impacts, which is often now described as adaptation, is as less disruptive, as little disruptive as possible, so that you don't enter the realm of loss and damage. So keep that these non-economic losses to people to a minimum.
Are there any like three golden rules that you would say one has to follow when doing that, or is that too contextual, too specific with regards to the specific, for example, movement or migration or the specific island country that you're working with?
I don't know whether there are three golden rules, but you've just mentioned one of them, which is context. So I think one of the most important things is when we look at planned relocation is to look at the context that the people live in and really, really talk to people on the ground what their needs are and what they believe they're going to lose when they have to move, and what you can provide in the new location in order to mm-hmm. make them feel better. So I think one of the golden rules is to look at the context and really engage the people that are affected, rather than having a one size fits all. So I think that's a really important point.
Mm-hmm. Just out of curiosity, how does a PhD scholar from Australia who's based in Australia find out about an online climate conference that happens worldwide at some time in March and decides to submit a paper and all that? So how does that happen? Did you find, I don't know, some weird Twitter hashtag and you kind of went on from there? Or how did you know about the climate conference and what made you participate?
Yeah, so it was last year, it was actually when I presented the first paper. It was also organized by the University of Hamburg. That was in Lautoka in Fiji, where I presented the my spectrum on of planet relocation and loss and damage. And that's basically where it all started. So I was invited to the conference and I thought, oh, that's a great opportunity to have something that follows up on that paper, because the research is never finished. I was able to just have a little bit of a continuation of the paper that I presented there, and explain a little bit further what I think we need to do next. And that's what I did with the paper here for the Climate 2020 conference. So that's mm-hmm. how it happened. So okay, cool. it's a trip to Fiji, basically, that did it.
Yeah, but we're very happy that you took this opportunity, basically. And at our center, we do, in fact, organize worldwide events on climate change management regularly, almost every month, basically. We are hosting a large event. Nowadays, it's, of course, transferred to the online arena in that sense, in times of Corona, but we still continue. And the head of our center, Professor Walter Leal, he's the mastermind behind this international climate change series, actually. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But No, go ahead, please. Yeah.
The paper that was presented in Fiji and many others are also in the book that has just been published or went into print just I think a week ago or so.
Oh,
so
cool. We'll link to
that's
that.
Accessible as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. That's where it all fits together, basically. And I'm very happy also that we managed to include in the Climate 2020 conference a set of webinars, real live mm-hmm. webinars, basically. And one was exactly on the topic that Melanie is doing research on. We even had a representative of the government of Fiji with us who was talking about planned relocation and their strategies and what they have been doing, what they are planning to do, and Fiji is kind of acting as a role model for the entire Pacific region. If I took the key learnings from that webinar, and if I remember correctly, Melanie was also taking part in that webinar and asking some questions to our guests there.
Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that one, that webinar in particular. So I enjoyed. Actually, the first five, which are totally relevant to my research and helped me a lot to get a few more new ideas on how to look at my just on my data or the project in general. But that's also one of the things I mentioned in the paper that I've submitted, is that we need to look at these relocation guidelines. So I think the Fijian government outlined disaster relocation guidelines, and just 2 years ago they have published their planned relocation guidelines. They launched them at COP24, and I said that we need to have a look at how these guidelines address non-economic losses, mm-hmm. because it's often seen as something that is too hard to tackle, how are you going to address that? Is it compensation? How can you address personal losses to people? It's definitely not a flat payment of a few thousand dollars and you're fine. So it's a very complex complex issue.
Does that mean that whatever you can measure, whatever you can specify in amounts of, let's say, a currency of some sort, let's say dollars or whatever, is easier to reimburse and to finance just because you can put a straight number on it, whereas losing your home where you've lived for 80, 90 years maybe, or where generations before you have lived, did I get that right? That that's hard to quantify, and as such, people are not compensated for that, because how do you do that? Is that like one, would that frame it right, or would you disagree?
Yeah, so non-economic losses are inherently, they're non-monetary. So they are anecdotal. They're completely different from you and from me. You have a cup that when I destroy it, you lose the memory of, your grandmother gave it to you, for example. So I can't give you $10 and say, just go and get a new one, because it just wouldn't do it. So one of the characteristics of non-economic losses is that you can't trade them in markets. They don't have a monetary value, that they only have a personal and emotional value, a sentimental value. So it's not possible to put a dollar figure on it. And there might be possibilities of having alternative sort of compensatory measures that might help people to overcome these losses. For example, upskilling might be something that could help, or access to education, better access to health facilities. These are all things that we might have to discuss in the future, because compensation as a flat payment is something really controversial if you see it in the view of climate change, because you have that sort of victim-perpetrator relationship that you basically blame someone for doing something. So, so it is, especially in loss and damage, compensation is a very controversially discussed topic.
Let's maybe come back a bit to the climate conference itself, because I'm interested in how this worked. Basically, you're describing an online conference, and Franziska, you mentioned that you've been doing this for quite some time now. But I'm interested in what kind of formats work, given that lots of people in this current time are trying to move things online. And I see lots of, let's call it, activism in terms of, let's do something quickly, let's do something to put this format that we planned, this event that we planned online. I'm interested, for example, in the formats that you as a participant, Melanie, found helpful, but also where you, Franziska, from like the bird's eye view of the organizing structure, basically were able to tell, okay, this seems to be working out quite nicely, and this for some reason maybe isn't working out as planned, but completely differently. I don't know if there are some examples for that that either of you would be able to talk about. I'm not sure. Franziska, do you want to give it a start?
Yeah, I mean, with this platform, as I said, one of our objectives was really to reach out and to make it as widely accessible as we can. So we designed it as an open access, rather low-tech environment that you could easily access, even though easy access is sometimes can also be difficult and tricky. But as so many delegates managed, I think that was not a big hurdle. What we in addition tried was basically to provide a good mix of information in a way that could be kind of accessed and read and consumed in a way rather easily. So we had kind of online ready papers, not the traditional typical long research papers that you find in scientific journals, but very short, concise and compact summaries of existing research that you could easily kind of grab and grasp online. We wanted to make it in a way interactive so that you could discuss with the authors that basically may also been located at the other end of the world, like Melanie, for example. So I could write in a dialogue forum my question to her paper, and she might open up the page the next day or evening and then respond while I was still asleep in my time zone, basically. So that's where we use the kind of the principle of delayed response and interaction in one way. But certainly we also added some real life events that had a fixed date and a fixed time, basically, like the before mentioned webinars, the expert webinars. We spiced up the platform then with further content, such as some learning resources, further online learning resources that we found very useful and helpful to find in one spot, basically. We also added a lot of information on funding and access to additional finance, tried to support the networking and collaboration aspects that the delegates normally would share during kind of the coffee break at a regular mm-hmm. conference where people talk and exchange business cards, basically, something like this. And then we also try to involve the audience kind of in, for example, voting for a best paper. So just getting their votes. We also asked them that our delegates all the time during the event, basically, for direct feedback, very earnest feedback. How do you like the conference? Do you get along? Do you find a way? Are you satisfied with what you see, with what you have been experiencing so far? So we could mm-hmm. basically try to even improve on the spot. So we try to think in all kinds of directions to make the best fit for a very, very heterogeneous audience that we had here on our platform.
So I'm taking away, make content kind of online ready, so make it short and concise so that people can browse through, give people a chance to interact in forums and other ways to get in touch with one another, and not just don't make this a one-way street of communications, here's my paper and thanks and goodbye.
Exactly.
But also enable interaction, but also enable forms of interaction that go to you as the organizer yourself, right? Because you have a chance to maybe adapt something, maybe adapt the format, adapt, I don't know, the timetable or whatever it is.
Yes.
But I'm also taking away, and that's something that I would want to highlight, at least from my experience as well, is to think of an interesting blend of synchronous and asynchronous formats, given that you all are in a different time zone. When you have 3,000 people from all over the world participating in one online conference, you want to enable both synchronous and also asynchronous ways of interacting with one another, which from what you're yeah. describing seems to have worked out quite well. I don't know.
Yeah, basically we had participants from 155 mm-hmm. countries of the world. So wow. Just to illustrate the wealth basically of delegates and also pointing towards many, many different time zones we mm-hmm. were in basically during that time. Yes, mm-hmm. certainly.
So maybe adding on to that, I think it was a great way of also being able to engage scientists and researchers all over the world who usually do not get the chance to travel to conferences. So we're able with these with this type of communication, online conferences, to engage people from developing countries that we usually won't be able to reach, and making sure that their research is also being looked at, and so they are able to share it with people all over the world. I think that's one of the great advantages as well, and also. Looking at the current situation we're in with the coronavirus, this conference would have probably been one of the hundreds that would have been cancelled if it was in person, but we were still able to do it. And I thought that was just great. Yeah. What Francisca mentioned was what resonates with me. So I can, from a participant point of view, I had the same feeling. So I thought it was very well organized. I love that the webinars just started on time. They finished on time. I was able to have it in my schedule. And then I was able to browse through the website whenever I wanted. I had a few conversations with people afterwards, and through a colleague, we talked about the Green Climate Fund, and there might even be some collaboration that's coming out of nice. out of that conference. So I think it adds a lot of value having people being able to communicate through a conference like that. So I hope to see something like that more in the future, to be honest.
So what our listeners are not able to see, but when Melanie gave kind of her overall impression and feedback to the conference, you could see a smile going up on Francisca's face, because that's exactly the kind of feedback that she was hoping for. And just for our listeners, we did not stage this, so there have no scripts been exchanged prior to this recording.
And I mean, there are always challenges to the online engagement as well. It's not that it's not perfect. And like I said, there are advantages. Like, you can reach out to people that would otherwise never be able to attend your conference. But also, an online conference doesn't replace face-to-face and human interaction. But I think there are ways of how you can make online conferences more attractive. For example, I like the quiz and the voting. I just did it because I thought it was a fun thing to do. Voting on the papers is just, it got me a little bit engaged and looking at the content on the website, basically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was good.
Yeah, thanks very much for this wonderful feedback. Okay. Actually, so nothing to add from our side. No, that was actually what we hoped for, and we are very aware that there are certain limitations of this way of communicating and disseminating the information, certainly, and there's always room for improvement, sure, and we are working on that. So we take the feedback that we get from you, the delegates, very, very serious, and see how we can make it fit to our next online events. There are already several of them in the pipeline, for sure. And even though it's not Climate 21, 2021, there will certainly be a follow-up online climate conference at a somewhat later point of time. But we'll get out with this information at the given time, for sure. No, but you can certainly be sure, as a delegate, whenever you take part in our online events, that we listen to you and we are striving to improve. It's a continuous improvement process, basically, with these online arrangements, and we are learning as well from these exercises, as I call them, or projects, actually, worldwide projects. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Nice. So something to look forward to, upcoming events, online events, and upcoming opportunities to network and exchange ideas. We will have links to everything that has been mentioned so far. So we, given that the online conference is still, people can still check out the website, can still check out the papers that have been submitted and all that. So we will link to that. We'll also link to Melanie, the paper that you co-authored, that got the Best Paper Award and all that. The previous conversations that we had on this podcast always ended with one final question. And given that this kind of tradition has evolved over time, I wanted to keep it that way. And it's a question that kind of goes like this. So if you had to name one pragmatic means of climate action that listeners can take right now to tackle climate change, what would that be? And I'm not sure who of the two of you would want to start answering that question, but you both chuckled, and Francisca is pointing at Melanie, so I'm handing over to Melanie. Pragmatic means of climate action. Go.
Oh, great. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Francisca, I think.
It's an easy one.
Welcome. Yeah.
I mentioned to Christian that I get this question asked a lot, and because people think that if they do something small, it doesn't really make any big difference. So if I do something, what difference does that make in the world? But I tend to say, just start in your household. Just make sure that you turn your tap off when you don't need the water, or just turn the lights off when you leave the house. So these are just really, really small things. This is, I think, starts from the very, very, from the smallest you can go, basically. And if you also want to look at rubbish, then, you know, do your recycling. Make sure that you do that as well. So these are really small things that you can start with. So just look at what you are doing. Then you can go a bit further, and you can look at local shopping, for example. Then you go and have a look where you buy your food and where it comes from, things like that. Or where do your clothes come from? Think about meat consumption, for example. It's a really big one where you could just easily say, hey, let's have a meat-free day a week, which is really nothing if you consider how much meat you actually need to eat. So that's I think a really big one that we underestimate, has a lot of greenhouse gas emissions attached to it. So that's one thing that I tend to tell people. And then you can go a little bit further and look at what bank you're using. What are they investing their money in? Is it fossil fuels or is it renewable energy? So I think you just start small and just be a little bit more aware of what you're doing in your daily life. And if you do just a little bit and then you add on to it, then yeah, it will make a difference. And also think about that all the solutions that we're currently trying to do, may it be electric vehicles or recycling the right products into the right bins, and they will never be perfect. So there isn't, we don't have a perfect solution, but we need to keep on learning, and we just try to go for the best solution that we currently have, and then that's the best you can do. But at least, yeah, you are aware of it, and then you just add on to that. Keep getting better.
Taking away, not to be too overwhelmed by this whole huge complex problem, but start small and
start small. And, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. Make adjustments and just small things first. And then if you can move a bit further, and just accept that it might not be perfect.
All right.
So perfect. But still doing something is still better than doing nothing.
Great. Thanks, Franziska. Wow. Hard one to follow, isn't it?
Oh, that's really hard to follow. That was an exhaustive.
You told me I should
already.
Go first.
That was a perfect, actually. Yes, you. So, I had the same kind of thoughts. I mean, that's kind of reduce, reuse, recycle. The typical wording, basically. What might be added from my end is basically also alluding to our online conference experience, that we say we can actually reduce our CO2 footprint by these new ways of collaboration, and especially now in these times of Corona, where everyone is confined to the home offices and forced to use the digital environments platforms to collaborate, to cooperate, to work with each other. Maybe that's a path to pursue a bit more in future as well. You can kind of critically ask yourself, do I need to hop on every plane to go to a meeting, or might it be an option also to hold such a meeting online, at least maybe not every time, but at least for every other opportunity possibly. And then certainly something alluding to your very good examples, Melanie, where you said if everyone does a little step at one time or so, basically using the power of the crowd to make a big impact overall. Maybe that's one thing that I would also underscore, that everyone could make, yes, in a way.
All right. If you, dear listeners, would like to listen to our podcast on a regular basis, please consider subscribing. It is free and always will be free. You can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, but the easiest way to subscribe is to use the podcast app on your phone, search for Climate Chats, and click subscribe. There you will have access to additional links and resources like the ones we just talked about. Of course, you can also listen to us by visiting the website of the Worldwide Online Climate Conference, Climate 2020. If you like our podcast or if you disliked anything, we'd really appreciate your feedback. Simply email us at contact@dl4sd.org. or find us on Twitter at @FTZ_NK_Hamburg. Thank you, Melanie and Franziska, for taking the time.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us. My pleasure.
I hope to see you soon. Maybe not on the Climate Chats podcast, but maybe at another conference, an online meeting somewhere. Thank you for listening. Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.